Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Gay athletes have always been with us, and we're hearing more and more about how they function in the pro sports, but we don't hear much about college athletics. That's starting to change. Here's a segment from a new video produced by Ohio State University. It begins with a short statement by OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith, and then includes a montage statement from members of the OSU hockey team. Here's how it ends.
Ohio State University. We play with passion. We play with integrity. But most of all, we play with equality. If you can play, you can play.
Despite such gestures, however, homophobia in college sports is hardly a thing of the past. Joining us now to talk about that is Ohio State University Athletic Director Gene Smith. Gene is in his seventh year as Director of Athletics at The Ohio State University. He previously served as Director of Athletics at Arizona State, Iowa State, and Eastern Michigan Universities. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. It's good to be here.
Also with us is Sue Rankin. She's an associate professor of education at Penn State. She's the retired head coach of Penn State's softball team and the lead author of the Campus Pride 2012 LGBTQ National College Athlete Report. Welcome to the show, Sue.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
Let's start with you. You just took the temperature, I guess, of the atmosphere on college campuses for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender athletes. What are you comparing 2012 to?
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. And before I do that, I'd like to just say thank you to Gene. Gene, what you've done with the You Can Play video and the Pride Night with the hockey team as the first Division I sport to participate in the project, I just want to say thank you. I think that's a huge step forward, and I really appreciate your going out there and doing that for us. So
thank you.
So in response to Ann's question, the project was actually a student-athlete climate study that was done via a support from grant from the NCAA. To look at all student-athletes, and one subset of that group was the LGBT student-athletes. We were fortunate to get over 400 respondents who identified as LGBT in that particular project, and there really is no comparison, Ann, to respond to your question. It's the first time we've done a project that includes that large population of current student-athletes playing who identify outside of heterosexual.
So without that contrast, then, how do you summarize it?
Well, I think it's important that we now are doing this in a way that's more systematic. So we're trying to actually have sexual orientation, gender identity actually on applications for college admissions programs or some of the national studies like NESI and SERP to allow us to have those kind of comparative data.
Mm-hmm.
But the temperature is compared with other perhaps people on college campus identifying as LGBT, which is the work that I do outside of this.
Mm-hmm.
And student-athletes overall who are LGBT, if we just look at their sexual orientation and compare them to their heterosexual counterparts, there really isn't a difference in the three outcome measures that we looked at, which is academic success, athletic success, and developing their own identity, until you put climate in as a mediating factor. And so when you put climate in, which is the climate within intercollegiate athletics, on their teams, on the overall campus, then all three of those are impacted in a negative way, if it's a negative climate, and conversely, if it's a positive climate in a positive way.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. With me in the studio, OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith. We're also talking with Sue Rankin, Associate Professor of Education at Pennsylvania State University and the lead author of the Campus Pride 2012 LGBTQ National College Athlete Report. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Sue, is it worse at some colleges, worse in some sports, worse for some people? I suppose it's a million different things.
Well, and it's really the context of the institution. I say that what Gene's
most importantly,
what Gene's at Ohio State shows the student athletes this is not okay to discriminate in any way for any reason against any athlete. You can play, which is a wonderful project. So I think to say it's worse or better in some sports would be inappropriate. It really is the context of the department, I think, that has the biggest impact.
Gene Smith, what are you shooting for when you're thinking about atmosphere at OSU? What does that feel like? What does it look like? How do you know?
Well, you know, I think Sue said it well. You know, our objective is to create an environment for our student athletes to be successful academically, athletically, and developing in a holistic way. And I think that's true of all of our students at the institution. So what we want to do is create a culture of acceptance. regardless of your personal interest or what you do, is okay. And so what we want to do is make sure that our culture is one that helps people be successful in those three areas, regardless of your race, your religion, your politics, or your sexual preference. None of those things should matter relative to those particular goals.
Sue Rankin, what does harassment look like or sound like these days?
It's much more subtle than it used to be. Mm-hmm. I've done this for, 3 or 4 now studies that look at this across the country, and it was much more overt previously, and it tends to be a little more subtle. And those subtle things kind of build up, and the research calls it microaggression, where you might hear "that's so gay" 19 times in a locker room, or "faggot" or "dyke" or whatever it might be in a derogatory way. And you might just let it fly off your back, right? But if you hear that over and over again, eventually that takes its toll. And what we found was that takes its toll both on the playing field, or in the playing arena, in your academic classroom experiences, and then also in developing your own identity. You tend to hide some of that identity, which then makes it much more difficult for you to be successful.
Does it take a toll on people who are straight, who aren't necessarily the target or the victim per se, but it just affects the whole climate when people hear that, even if they don't like it, and even if they're not the target, what do they do?
Well, and what do you say is kind of the, you know, how do I respond to it? Mm-hmm. What's the best way for me to impact that? And I know you're going to have Pat Griffin on later on, and she can speak more to that about
right.
some of the training that's going on with coaches, because it used to be when I do a program with coaches, they kind of sit with their arms folded, like, I don't want to be here. But more recently, those conversations are, they're very open. They're like, look, I want to do something, but I'm not sure what to do. Can you help me? Can you help me understand what I should do to make it more welcoming in my on my team or in the environment that I'm coaching in?
You wrote that in-house harassment is more prevalent, and I wonder how so. When you mean in-house, you mean right on the team in the locker room?
Yeah, and we find that with other people, too. Like, where you spend most of your time, I mean, student-athletes spend all of their time together, pretty much. And so what they're finding and why Gene's work at Ohio State is so important is that we found that having people who are supportive in administrative roles and leadership roles, like coaches and trainers and athletic directors, creates a climate that allows people to be more open about who they are and feel safe in doing so. Right, so that allows them to be more successful, which is what we want to do in athletics. We want to win.
Gene Smith, you've worked at Arizona State, Eastern Michigan University, Ohio State. When did you start speaking out about this, whether it was to your, you know, the people who worked for you, whether it was to players? How did this evolve for you as a top administrator in big-time college sports?
Well, it really started at Eastern Michigan University, which is where I started in administration. And it didn't start relative to the LGBT issue. It really started to a respect for diversity.
In general.
I'm a huge believer that diversity is the one true thing we all have in common, and we should celebrate it and respect it every single day. It's creating an environment where you can bring different groups of people from all different types of background and interests that allows you to be successful in life. And so it started really from there. It was more, frankly, a business decision.
It just was good business.
Yeah, it was good business. But when you peel that back, and look at all the different people that come into your environment, then you need to respect that diversity and help those people thrive. And obviously in athletics, and Sue's work is unbelievable, Sue, and I appreciate you doing it, because we do not have quantifiable measurements. Mm-hmm. Everything that I've been doing is anecdotal. And so now she's bringing something that we could look at and compare to. So I started years ago at Eastern Michigan University, and being an African-American, I can appreciate and draw parallels to everything that Sue just talked about. You know, there's certain words you don't use around African-Americans. There's certain jokes you don't say around African-Americans. And that's gone more covert today than it was years ago. So I appreciated it from that perspective, which allowed me to have a little bit more sensitivity to LGBT individuals.
Sue Rankin, you said that athletic personnel have to look beyond the obvious to help LGBT athletes. What's the obvious, and describe what's the beyond?
Good question.
If I had a million-dollar question, right? I think.
Will you pay me $1 million?
We are moving forward. I mean, and I think, you know, I've been in higher education 35 years, and I coached for 17 of those, and was in athletics before that. So, it wasn't easy as a openly lesbian coach and or athlete in Division I back in the day. I think it's changing, but it's not great. I mean, mm-hmm. there are still lots of places where it's not okay. NCLR is doing a great job in assisting when there's been discrimination or harassment and people have lost jobs or athletes feel as if they're discriminated in some way. I think that there's been a lot of change and we're moving forward. I think Pat Griffin and I say never in my lifetime moments have happened exponentially over the last 10 years. The NCAA hosting a summit to look at LGBT issues. A year later, one to look at transgender issues, which is really part of a play issue. And that's what I think we're talking about now, the transgender piece. And when do student-athletes who are identifying differently than their biological birth sex, the gender identity, you know, when can they play in their preferred sport, right? So I think all of those things are on the horizon and we're moving forward, but I didn't think it would happen in my lifetime, frankly. So I'm excited about where we are and where we're going. Some of the things in athletics we can do, I think, is what Gene is doing, is actually talking about this in an outward way and saying we're not going to let this happen. If it does, you're not an Ohio State player. You're not a head coach. You're not putting forth the culture that we want to do at Ohio State. That's the kind of thing we need from other athletic directors. We're finding it now in the pro ranks. We had a Nike supported a LGBT sports summit last June with professional sports, recreational sports, college sports, and K-12 sports, to try and look at this issue in a broad way, and how can we end homophobia in sport? That's kind of our vision and goal.
We're seeing things change very, very quickly across the national scene politically, if you want to put it in political terms, regarding same-sex marriage and so forth. And a lot of people say that's just generational. This is just going to go away with the generations as they become more and more accepting. Sue Rankin, before I let you go, I wondered, do you think that's going to lag? What are your expectations as far as how that manifests in college sports and going forward in professional sports? You think there's going to be a little bit of a lag?
Well, we already
know there is a lag.
Yeah, there's a lag. Mm-hmm. We're a microcosm of what happens in the larger context. We like to say we're a little bubble in higher education or on our own campuses, but we aren't. We are influenced by those societal kind of things that are happening. So will those things influence how we move forward in athletics? Maybe. We thought about that in the military as well, right? So the military and athletics are kind of the last bastions, I think, where you have to try and bring down those walls of indifference around issues of difference. So thinking about what Gene talked about, it's not just about sexual orientation. It's about race and gender. Why aren't there more black coaches in Division I? Why aren't there more women coaches of women's sports? That's gone down since Title IX, which doesn't make any sense. So I think there's lots of things around diversity we can look at that, it's going to change. I think it is changing. I'm excited about where we're moving. I appreciate, you know, again, folks like Gene and the NCAA for now supporting some outside studies that are not internal to the NCAA that look at this in a broad way. And I'm hoping that the research that we do can help inform some of the programs and policies that are happening in athletics.
And just one more thing. I mean, it's safe to say that the percentage, you know, of the general population, it plays out across the board with athletics, just because, say, Gene Smith only knows of one OSU athlete that's out right now or that is gay, doesn't mean there aren't many, many more.
Oh, no. So we had 400 plus in our study, but I can name on one hand those who are currently out.
Right.
I will say, you asked about which sports and things like that.
Yeah.
I can say that divisionally, that most of the people identified in our study were Division III. They weren't in Division I FBS. Right, they're not in football championship series, football bowl series. So, you know, there might be some still in those high-profile sports at large Research One institutions, Division One institutions, that there's still some stigma in being open about who you are.
Yeah, let me add to that if I can, mm-hmm. Ann, before we lose Sue, because it's one of the challenges with athletics changing consistent with society's change is that athletics has still that closeness issue. You still have that locker room, and society doesn't have that. And I think that's one of the challenges that we all face, and I face it, because that young person may not necessarily come out or come for help because they don't want to, in that closeness, in that locker room, let it be known of their preference. And that's one of the things that we all struggle with. How do we free it up so that they can feel comfortable?
Exactly. You couldn't have said it better, Gene. Thank you. It really is about how do we allow folks to be who they are and feel safe in doing so. That's a safety issue. They're afraid for their safety with due cause, given some of the things that have occurred. And the reason that I've done this work is that I've seen too many, not just student-athletes, but LGBT students on college campuses who have isolated themselves in some way because of who they are, which often leads to depression, which often then leads to, unfortunately, suicide in some cases. And so we want to make sure that, I want to make sure that I can do what I can do to try and have that, stop that from happening.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today to help us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm sorry I can't stay for the rest, but got to teach class.
Next time. Thanks, Sue. Sue Rankin, she's an associate professor of education at Pennsylvania State University. She's a retired head coach of Penn State softball team and the lead author of the Campus Pride 2012 LGBTQ National College Athlete Report. Gene Smith, AD at Ohio State University, will stay with us, so I hope you will, too. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Thanks for joining us today on 89.7 NPR News. It's 43 degrees with cloudy skies, a slight chance of rain today, and a high around 50. Mostly cloudy tonight, dropping down to a low of 37, clouds and breezy on Saturday with a high of 55. Support for 89.7 comes from Home Instead Senior Care, providing seniors in Central Ohio with one-on-one support from caregivers who receive training, are bonded, and insured. More at homeinstead.com or 1-800-4-SENIORS. Home Instead Senior Care. To us, it's personal. And support comes from Ohio Northern University, investing in the success of its students by offering more than $58 million in scholarships and financial aid each year. ONU offers nationally ranked academics and a 92% job placement rate. Junior Explore ONU Day is April 20th. Details at onu.edu. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the issue of homophobia and the growing intolerance of homophobia in college athletics. Still with us is Ohio State University Athletic Director Gene Smith, who has made the acceptance of all athletes and coaches, all people, including those who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, a top priority for his administration. Joining us now is Pat Griffin, founding director of Changing the Game and co-author of a new NCAA guide to navigating the broadening world of LGBT athletes in college sports. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
The guide is 82 pages long. Who is it for? Coaches, athletes, or everybody?
Well, our target audiences are all of the above. We hope that it'll be useful to athletic conference administrators, athletic administrators, coaches, and student athletes. We have specific references in the resource guide that target each of those groups.
There's probably a lot of guides that come out of the NCAA, right?
Yes, I think so. That's
it's an understatement.
I don't know. I just have a feeling it's one of those kind of groups. So how did you prepare this for, you know, given the NCAA's, you know, guidelines of its own? What did they ask you to do?
Well, it came out of the inclusion office of the NCAA, and particularly working closely with the subcommittees, which are made up of athletic administrators and coaches who serve on the committee for women in athletics and the committee for minorities in athletics. And Hudson Taylor and I worked with those two groups to design a resource that they wanted. They told us what they were interested in terms of content, and we added other things that we felt were important and came up with something that I think is probably the most comprehensive and most practical guide for addressing issues that coaches, student athletes, and athletic administrators face in relationship to making athletics a great place for people of all sexual orientations and gender identities.
Could you give us an example of something? For instance, what are the instructions like for the coach when an athlete comes out to him or her?
Okay, it's actually we have a specific resource that addresses exactly that. I think the first thing that we recommend is that if an athlete comes out to a coach, the first thing the coach should do is pat themselves on the back, because what that says is that they have created the kind of relationship with that athlete and the kind of climate on their team where an athlete feels they can come out and it won't jeopardize their place on the team or their relationship with the coach. And that in itself is a great step forward. We also recommend that the coach take the lead of the athlete in terms of what to do next. Sort of as ask the athlete, how can I support you? What do you want to do? Do you want to come out to the rest of the team? How can I support you in that? Or, you know, what is it that you need me to do? And offer themselves up as a resource to help that athlete make it the best experience possible.
Gene Smith, I would imagine student athletes have come to you when you were a coach for all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
A lot of troubles.
Yes, right. Never this. I mean, I think I've had one athlete in my tenure that's ever come to me with this issue. And while we know a number of our athletes in our sports are LGBT members, they don't come and say, you know, hey, I need help with this. That just hasn't happened to me. Now, it's happened with some of our coaches. But they come to us with a myriad of issues. And everywhere I've been at Eastern, Iowa State, Arizona State, and here, you pretty much can figure out if you pay attention. And everywhere I've been, I've been blessed to have coaches and administrators who are LGBT, and we accept and help them perform their duties and tasks. And everyone knows. And so that helps create that culture environment that everybody knows is accepting for us. And so it should help the athlete as well, because athletes, you need to model that behavior for them to accept it. So I'm sure our coaches get more contact than I do in my job. And actually, Pat, I appreciate the guide. I haven't read the guide. I'm looking forward to reading it and making sure that my administrators and coaches read it. So that we can pick up some additional strategies and tactics to allow us to be more open in our culture. But the reality is, if you create that culture, 99% of the time, those athletes who are comfortable, they're going to be all right. Our problem is trying to help those ones who aren't comfortable yet. How do we get to them and make them feel comfortable?
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You just heard from Gene Smith, Associate Vice President and Director of Athletics at Ohio State University. Also with us is Pat Griffin. She is Founding Director of Changing the Game, and also she is co-author of a new NCAA guide what's the name of it, Pat? I did not get it written down. It's called, it's an NCAA
Champions,
guide. Yeah.
Champions of Respect.
Champions of Respect. Sorry about that.
When did that come out, Pat? Is that out now? Or what?
It actually came out last week. It's hot off the press. And an athletic director, Gene, you should be receiving a hard copy. And I think they're going to send PDF copies by email to all coaches, too.
Beautiful. I have the guide on transgender.
Yes, I co-authored that one as well.
Okay, I like that one, Pat. That was shorter, sounds like.
Well, we have a question. We have a caller right now who wants to talk about that specific topic. If anyone else out there has a question, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Cara in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I've had several friends who are transgender over the years who have had to walk away from universities, their teams, their scholarships, and in some ways their education, too, in order to transition. And I was wondering how the You Can if You Can Play, You Can Play applies to transgender students and also those who express more gender variance in their expression. And also kind of generally what the direction is for the future. I know that there's a trans woman who's in the mixed martial arts now, and there's some controversy over that. And I know that there is a player in Florida, I believe, on a college team, a trans guy playing on a women's team. And I was wondering also kind of like about the flexibility of the rules.
First of all, I wondered, Gene Smith, if you could just refresh our memories about what the You Can Play.
Yeah.
You Can Play.
It's really a promotion that came out of the NHL, came out of the professional hockey players and wanting to try and promote inclusiveness and openness. And so we felt it was a great promotion. Our hockey players.
It came from the hockey players.
Yeah, it came from the hockey players.
I was going to ask you, why did you start with hockey?
Yeah, it came from the hockey program, the hockey players, and it was a great promotion. We've done a few events with our local LGBT association and hosted some receptions. And so our athletes and our administrators and coaches know of our acceptance, and so we they just wanted to do it. And one of our former hockey players is in the NHL. He was a part of the promotion, so it kind of came through that channel, and it worked extremely well for us. Relative to Kara's call, and I'm going to defer to Pat on the technical part of her question because I might not articulate that real well relative to when, if you're taking drugs, Pat, then there's a rule around that. Or guidance around that.
Right.
But I think, Kara, the what we're talking about today is exactly the challenge, is how do you help someone who's transgender get to a comfort level to be able to ask for help or be able to just come out to a person, be it a coach, be it an administrator or a trainer, so that person can go to the proper channels to say, okay, how do we help this person? And that's the guide that I just read about 2 weeks ago that is well written, Pat, and you might speak to the particulars of that better than I could.
Pat?
Yes. Well, first of all, I think relative to the You Can Play project, I know that they have not at this point focused on transgender athletes in their promotions. I think mm-hmm. they have every intention of doing that in the future. But as far as the NCAA goes, 2 years ago, they took a proactive stance and decided to publish some guidelines for the inclusion of transgender athletes on NCAA teams, which they did. They published the guideline that we've been talking about, and it's now available from the NCAA. And these are recommendations that they make to member institutions. It's up to each institution to adopt their own guidelines, but I'm hoping that most schools will take the recommendations that the NCAA has made for including transgender athletes. And basically, it's the NCAA guidelines. It's not like the IOC where you have to have gender reassignment surgery in order to participate. We really tried to update those guidelines and make them more friendly to transgender students and to make it possible for students to participate on teams in accordance with their gender identity. It is true that it's a hormone-based policy, so that it depends on whether or not the athlete is taking hormones, whether or not they can determine which team they can play on. So, for example, we've had a couple of athletes. The caller referred to an athlete in Florida. Probably the one that got the most attention was a transgender man who played on the George Washington University basketball team a couple of years ago, Kai Allums. And Kai was allowed to play on the women's team because he was not taking testosterone. He had made a social transition in that he identified as a man, but he was not taking testosterone yet. And so the ruling was, according to the NCAA recommendations, that he could continue to play on the women's team. A male who's transitioning to female, the rules are a little different. That person would have to have been taking estrogen for a year, and then they would be able to play on the women's team. Because the research that we have so far, and granted, we don't have a whole lot of research on this topic yet, but the research that we have so far indicates that a male taking estrogen and transitioning to female after 1 year would place their hormone levels within the range of biological females.
Are these documents going to be available to people out in the public, Pat Griffin, so that they can avail themselves of it and know what the guidelines are?
Our intention is to have these documents distributed as far as and wide as possible. The NCAA recommendations were based on a think tank that happened 3 or 4 years ago, I can't remember now, that was co-sponsored by the National Center for Lesbian Rights and the Women's Sports Foundation. Mm-hmm. And we pulled in people from high school sports, collegiate sports. The NCAA participated in that. We had transgender law experts, transgender advocates, medical people who were knowledgeable at transgender issues and came up with participation recommendations for both high school and college. Thus far, I would have to say that not many schools have adopted the policies, and that's something that I think is really important. It's really important for schools to adopt the policies before transgender students come knocking on the door and says, I want to play, because then you're operating in crisis mode, and you're putting the onus for the school to become open to transgender students on the individual transgender student. What we need to have schools do is to adopt these policies ahead of time, so then when a transgender student says, I want to play, they're all set. They've got the guidelines. They've educated their coaches and their staff.
That's exactly right, Pat.
And that, yeah, frankly, I'm sure.
We've adopted it, and one of the questions that I would pose is I wonder how we're capturing the information on how many schools have adopted it or not. I know a number of my colleagues at my level have adopted it.
Is there a way to find out
about it? Yeah,
I mean, I want to go to a school that's adopted it.
Is there a survey or do you know?
Well, right now, I don't think the NCAA is tracking that information, because I've asked them myself if they have any sense of how many schools so far have adopted the policies. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that we can do a better job, either through some kind of research project or, you know, the NCAA taking a more proactive stance and kind of in tracking which schools have adopted these policies. Right now,
I know our school, I know my colleagues were looking forward to the transgender, because I think it was 4 years ago the tank started, and they've been looking forward to this one that recently came out, because we need that guidance. You know, we're athletic directors. We're not experts in this field. We can go on our campus and find that talent and skill among our academicians, but having it come from someone like you, coming from the NCAA, our association, helps us a little bit better, because there's an understanding of the cultural issues we deal with. And so I would recommend, and I would support, if I can help you, that the association start the survey and get that data so that we can start pushing schools who aren't adopting to at least share with us, what are you doing? If you're not doing anything, that's wrong.
And I think the best way to do that is for member schools, you know, leaders in member schools like you, to go to the NCAA and say, hey, I need this information. That's what moves them. I have to give kudos to the NCAA, because you could fault the NCAA for a lot of different things, but they certainly have taken seriously providing guidance to schools, both for the inclusion of transgender students and LGBT students, which is, I think, they need to be recognized for that.
Exactly.
We are talking about homophobia in college athletics and the growing intolerance for homophobia in college athletics with Jean Smith, Associate VP and also Director of Athletics at OSU, and Pat Griffin. She's founding director of Changing the Game and has co-written the new NCAA guide, just came out last week. It's called Champions of Respect. If you'd like to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Pat and Jean will be with us when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This week, a lengthy profile of Anthony Weiner and his wife in the New York Times let the world know that Weiner's back. Well, it's better than Weiner's front. I'm Peter Sagal. We've given up on returning to polite society. On this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
And Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, tomorrow morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. All Sides Weekend begins, and host Christopher Purdy talks about the best books for spring reading. Join us for All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon. And it's 45 degrees. There is a chance of rain off and on throughout the day today and a high around 50. Clouds with a slight chance of rain tonight and a low of 37. Support for All Sides comes from Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences, presenting a new take on the tragic tale of Carmen. Performances of an unconventional chamber version take place April 13th and 14th at Ohio State's Thurber Theater. More information at music.osu.edu. And support comes from Ohio State's Ross Heart Hospital, helping to build healthy hearts with the 2013 Wellness Series. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, and regular physical activity is a great way to prevent it. Details about Ohio State's Wellness Series are at go.osu.edu/series. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the issue of homophobia and the growing intolerance of homophobia in college athletics. Still with us is Ohio State University Athletic Director Gene Smith. He's made the acceptance of all athletes and coaches, including those who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, a top priority for his administration. Also still with us is Pat Griffin, founding director of Changing the Game and co-author of a new NCAA guide to navigating the broadening world of LGBT athletes in college sports. It's called Champions of Respect. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Ann. And a question either Gene or Pat maybe could do is, maybe it's a practical question. You've discussed there's various different orientations, and sometimes the folks of those orientations like to come out publicly, and some it's more of a private matter. And I guess on that, I was thinking of the question of the actual physical training facilities for the different athletes. Whatever the orientation of the students, athletes are, many of them, perhaps, I guess you would say they might be modest. And in terms of changing and showering, maybe some of these students would like a little privacy among those that maybe would be those that they're most attracted to. And I don't know if the universities have looked at that. For example, when I was in sports, I'm a male, and I was my attraction was to girls. And so there was no concern on my part on a communal shower changing facilities. But in the things that you're bringing up, the different orientations, and also there's a lot more of the Islamic students who culturally tend to have stronger desire for a little privacy. So just on the physical facilities, any accommodations on that?
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Gene, do you want to talk about OSU?
Yeah, I think I'm going to defer to Pat on the transgender one because that's there's some requirements in there on separate facilities. But that's one of our challenges. There's no question that that's what makes it very difficult for any gay student to actually come forward and come out and actually share their sexual preference because of that closeness in that environment. So you hit on one of our challenges. Some of our facilities have separate areas for you to shower, but that is available for everyone, and it's a matter of if you get there first. So it's not designated to your point, Mark.
And some people just like to shower alone, period.
That's right. But majority of your locker rooms are communal or gang lockers. And if someone came to me and we had a particular request to deal with that, then we'd accommodate it. But at this point, that has not happened. But I know with the transgender one, there's guidelines on that. So I defer to Pat on that.
Pat Griffin?
Well, I think just a word about the whole idea of concern about having a gay man or a lesbian in the locker room. I think it's really important to make the point that a lot of the concern around that is based on stereotypes. It's sort of the assumption that if you're gay, that somehow you're sort of always sort of sexualizing your teammates. And I want to make it really clear that gay and lesbian athletes in the locker room are thinking about the same things that their teammates are thinking about. They're thinking about their performance in the game. They're thinking about their practice. They're thinking about a test they've got in an academic subject in the next day. And so I really want to challenge that myth that somehow there's some kind of issue with having gay men and lesbians in the locker room. I think it's a stereotype that we need to challenge head on and differentiate between, is someone uncomfortable in the locker room because of their own perceptions and fears, comfortable in the locker room because of something that, an inappropriate thing that someone has done in the locker room. So I think that's an important thing to meet head on.
Great
and
point.
I believe that every locker room should have some provision for privacy. As the caller said, and as Gene reinforced, I think there's lots of reasons besides being transgender or being gay or lesbian or modest or having some religious concern about dressing in a communal locker room. I think every locker room, every changing area should have some provision for privacy. And I think that's a really important part of the answer. In terms of accommodating transgender students, the general guideline is that students should be able to use the locker room in accordance with their gender identity. And I think that sometimes means that they are accommodated by having a separate private changing area, if that's what they prefer, or having some kind of privacy provided in a locker room. But generally, the overall guideline is that students should be able to use bathrooms and locker rooms and changing facilities in accordance with their gender identity. But I think, again, it's each school has to work out what works best for them.
Thank you, Mark, for that question. Lou sent us an email. He says, I guess it's a he. I played sports at the Division III college level and experienced team members treating me differently. There are also coaches who have reputations of, if you're gay, you don't want to play for that coach. In hiring a coach, how would Gene Smith avoid hiring a coach like that at OSU? Don't you have to be careful about what questions you ask them? I'm curious how that would work at a major university. It's a good question.
It's a good question. Well, first of all, there's a obviously, in-depth background checks that you go through, not just your formal structural background checks through different firms or municipalities, but it's relationships with people in the industry that you talk to. And it's funny, I teach people all the time, you know, someone puts five or six names on the resume as references. It's rare that I ever call those people. So,
right.
I call equipment manager, trainer, or have my colleagues call those people. So we try and learn about that person and the environment that they're in. And majority of the time, those things surface through our connections. And then when we interview them, you're right, there's certain things we can't ask them, but you know, when I get down into your values and talk about your character and look you in the eye and those type things, we go at that pretty hard. We can talk about our environment of acceptance. We can talk about what's important to us. And if you can't handle that, you can't work here. I'm pretty firm in that. And so could you possibly make a mistake? Yes. And when those mistakes are made, then you have to evaluate. Can that person's behavior be modified? Is it a young coach and you can teach them? Or frankly, do they have to you have to facilitate a transition for them to go to a place where they can work differently?
But it's never about their record on the
field?
Never
about their record. I mean, at the end of the day, the most successful coaches, those who get the best results, understand the value of the holistic development of a student. So they have great character, great value. They understand that if you're creating a team of people, most coaches don't care what your preference is. You know, the good ones don't care. They want to know, are you going to do what you're supposed to do in the classroom? Are you going to do what you're supposed to do off the field? And ultimately, can you help this team win? And so, you know, it's something that to the caller, to the emailer, you can make a mistake on, but we focus on it very hard to try not to make that mistake.
Alex sent us this email. As a former OSU varsity athlete fencing, I would like to thank OSU Athletic Department as a whole for fostering great accepting environment. I was out during all of my time on campus and met with nothing but support from my teammates, coaches, medical staff, and members of the athletic department. Thank you, Gene, for an important work you are doing.
Well, thank you. It gives me chills. You know, yeah. that's great, Gene, feedback.
Kudos to you for getting that kind of feedback.
Is Gene that unusual, Pat?
Well, I think Gene is unusual because he is speaking out and being very public about his commitment to making sure that Ohio State athletics is inclusive. I think that, that is what separates Gene from because I think there are, he would probably agree with me, there are other athletic directors who share his values, but I can't overemphasize the importance of athletic directors making this clear. And again, to reinforce what Gene said about to the last question, athletic directors set the tone for the athletic department, and if they are public and visible in terms of their commitment to making the athletic climate one that's safe and respectful for students of all sexual orientations and gender identities, then the coaches who work for them understand that, and that sets the tone for how coaches interact and the kind of standards they set with their teams.
When I decided I wanted to do this show, one of the first things I said is, well, try calling Gene Smith. You know, he's a big shot, but, you know, he might be, he might come on the show. And you know, right off the bat he did, but then he reminded me when he was in the studio, Pat, that, well, it is spring break. His schedule isn't quite as rough. We have received an email from Dustin. He writes, LGBT student athletes might be made a target in opposing stadiums and arenas because of their sexuality, especially in basketball arenas where chants are easily started and the players' bench is so close to the crowd. How could we prepare LGBT student athletes for having their orientation mocked or made light of by opposing fans? What in the world would you do, Gene?
It's hard.
Has that ever happened?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? That's a conversation that occurs for any student athlete that has that type of challenge. And so it could be anything. It could be student athletes whose parents got divorced and it's public. I mean, you give a crowd, particularly in basketball, in the student sections, anything that they can come up with, they'll come up with it. So it's a conversation. And the greatest thing about athletics is not the greatest thing. One of them is you develop this fortitude, this internal strength in order to deal with those type things and shut them down and understand that they're not important in life. You know, it's a straight up conversation with that young person. They know that that's going to happen somewhere, and to be surprised by it should not be something that we ignore. So I defer to Pat a little bit.
Yeah, Pat, anything about that in the guidelines as far as?
Yes.
Okay.
Certainly, you know, there are many factors to making an athletic climate welcoming, and I think part of it is sort of setting some standards about what's appropriate. I mean, to express your devotion to your team as a spectator and a fan, and what isn't. And I think that the athletic department plays a huge role in sort of setting some standards for what's okay and what's not okay in terms of expressing support for your team. And certainly, it seems like the kind of chants that are racist, sexist, homophobic, you know, inappropriate in those ways, not only affect the athletes on the court, but I think they affect the rest of the people in the stands. It makes the entire experience of being a fan feel a little bit less safe and uncomfortable. And so I believe that athletic departments need to take a stronger stand in not only preparing the athletes for encountering that kind of a climate, but also to try to educate fans and make it really clear what the expectations are, and then, you know, do some education when fans don't hold to those standards.
If you have a little bit of time, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Gene Smith, if you find an athlete has harassed somebody, we've talked about how subtle it's becoming,
right,
which makes it more challenging. But if there is an athlete who violates this value that you're putting forth at Ohio State, are there consequences?
Yeah, and everything's situational. So if we're
correct,
let me give you examples. So if we're dealing with a first year student athlete who comes in and we experience that situation, then we'll send them through some level of education and work with them. But if we have an upperclassman, you know, a junior or senior, we do not have prescribed sanctions mm-hmm. for that type of behavior, but we come up with something based upon the situation because it's unacceptable. And so it really depends on where they are. Freshmen, I can tell you, I'm pretty sensitive to the 17, 18-year-old we get in.
They're coming out of high school.
Yeah, they're not really assimilated into our culture. We're mm-hmm. asking them to take the values that they grew up with and now merge those values into our values, and we need to give them time. So we're going to make some mistakes. But ultimately, we will deal with that one-on-one.
Well, we talked about when you're recruiting coaches and other mm-hmm. personnel to your team. Mm-hmm. What about when you're recruiting players to the team? Mm-hmm. Do you talk about the values of the campus and of, you know, the athletic department then
yeah.
too?
I doubt if that conversation occurs with all of our recruited student
okay.
athletes. It'll recur with, you know, your more structured family environment where, you know, you have a good family environment and you're sitting in the living room and you're having that conversation with the parents. But a lot of situations that doesn't occur in recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
It may just be the high school coach and the athlete. So you never get to that deep of a conversation. While you're assessing character
mm-hmm.
and you're looking for people with good character and you make some assumptions about that. But as far as actually having that conversation about our environment, not all the time.
Pat Griffin, are there any guidelines in the Champions of Respect that help coaches hire other coaches, help coaches who to do what Gene's been talking about?
Well, we strongly recommend in the guide that that athletic department should look at what's included in not only new student athlete orientation materials, but also new coach orientation materials, and that the athletic department's position and policies regarding LGBT athletes should be a part of that orientation, so that there shouldn't be any surprises. Any new coach or new student athlete coming in should see in print and should hear from their orientation program what the expectations are around respect and inclusion.
Good ideas.
Pat Griffin, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure.
Thanks, Pat Griffin,
founding director of Changing the Game and co-author of the new NCAA guide, hot off the presses. It's called Champions of Respect. And also Gene Smith, associate vice president and director of athletics at OSU. Thanks for joining us, Gene.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you, Pat.
And thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.